We did have a bit of a crowd for the Sunday class. They're both working?
Yes.
They're both working. Okay.
Rebbe, I'm very impressed with your sound system.
It's not me, it's no, this was because of Rabbi Lichtenstein. Now I'm the only one using it. And then there was the YU website, they've upgraded the little, whatever, sometimes you something. I told Danny Shulman yesterday that Netanyahu, in my opinion, the politicians this time around in forming a government have a very difficult task. Why? And I explained because Yair Lapid can't afford to compromise. It's a party that was elected on a single topic, sharing the burden. And if he compromises, he's a fly by night. He'll disappear. And sure enough, if you heard the 8 o'clock news, the leading item at 8 o'clock, I couldn't believe my ears, that the confidants of Netanyahu say this is the hardest negotiations he's ever had because he's dealing with people who are loyal to their principles and refuse to compromise, quote, end quote. I was laughing, so I told Malka, boy, I hit the nail on the head. All right, I've been living here 44 years, and 44 years, and believe me, I know the inner workings of this country. Baruch Hashem, I also know all the big shots. I know Netanyahu, I know Ari Derry, Baruch Hashem, I have a share in Bennett. You know who ran Bennett's campaign? Moshe Klukup. Who's Moshe Klukup? Sal Klukup's son, who made Sal into a Jew, a Zionist, brought him in Aliyah. You're looking at his first Rebbe, face on to 50 years ago. All right, it's 9 o'clock. Let us begin. We're missing a wonderful student, Charlie. Where is he? In New York now, visiting his mother, Kibbutz Abayim, and then he goes to Baltimore. Kol hakavod. Today is a very special class, very special for me, very moving, very emotional, as you will see. Today is Monday, February 4th, 2013. And Yitzhak, I thank you for sending me the information. It's a collection of articles. I see what it is. I know his work. I'm very well aware of it. He's more of a social historian than a Torah historian. He's a social historian of the Torah world. I know what I'm saying. What you're hearing in class is more, it's a little bit different than Professor Gorak, but each one, no, each one has their role, each one has their place. What's the problem?
It's very, very hot in here.
If you want, so turn off the heat, whatever you want. I'm comfortable.
Close the door.
I'm comfortable. But the difference is, Sam, you're a young man, and we're in our 70s, some of us, so that's why it's a little different. But you can turn the heat off or down, okay, Sam? Take care of it. Okay. And he's from England. England doesn't have the same heat that we're used to from Boston and New York. I take my word for it. Okay. So here we are in the history of Torah in the United States. And the last week's shiurs, if you recall, we saw the difference in YU between the student strike of, when I say YU, I'm using popular language, obviously what they call YU today, the difference between 1906 to 1908. 1908, they tried to bring Rabbi Leventhal in, and Rabbi Leventhal, even though he doesn't become president in Rosh Yeshiva, he remains in Philadelphia. The Philadelphia crowd demonstrates, pleading with him to remain, not to move to New York, not to take over the yeshiva. But the attitude has changed, and this is extremely important. The Balabatim, and it's now the Upper East Side Balabatim, understand the importance of what I told you, that in the middle of the meeting, on the Lower East Side, in the Hayas building, comes a messenger. Nathan Lamport wants you to adjourn the meeting and move uptown. Maybe the venue was Kehillat Jeshurun, Rabbi Klapman doesn't say. and we will have the meeting on the Upper East Side. Now, the minute you're dealing with these balabatim from the Upper East Side, they recognize that a yeshiva student in America has to have English, has to have a high school degree, has to have general knowledge, has to have savoir faire, has to have proper deportment. It becomes a different ballpark. And while Rabbi Leventhal would have been a fabulous choice, because Rabbi Leventhal was, I quote, his contemporaries said about him, he was the most Americanized of the Yudapeyesha Rabbanim in America. Rabbi Leventhal knew the ballpark, knew the game, knew English, knew the mentality, but he was caught between two worlds. And as I mentioned to you, Rabbi Rispin was a wonderful example, and I can mention it again and give you a drop of information and my feelings over the weekend. Rabbi Rispin is a wonderful example. If he would have been elected president of YU, man of vision, world vision, Jewish vision, Israel vision, but he can't leave Israel. Could be, if Vicky Wilson so insisted, his Yetzer Tov or Yetzer Hara would have won out and he could have left Israel. But when you got to deal with your wife and she says, this is where I remain, he can only be a part-time president. And the board of directors, board of trustees, I should say, I know that people got up at the key meeting and said, why you cannot get along with a part-time president. And even though Rabbi Rispin said, when I work part-time, I do more than someone working full-time, because as I told you, the secret of his success is he only needed 4 hours sleep. I don't know if today, when he's over 70, could be it's a different ballpark. As Rabbi Rispin already said in public, I'm not what I used to be. And people came to shul, I remember, so upset. Why you mismachim who love him? And they set off with crying. I figured, who knows what the virus gets out of it? What did he say that got you so upset? He said, I'm not what I used to be. But he couldn't break with Israel. And why you needed this? The same thing, Lahavdil, with Bernard Leventhal. Had he been able to tell Philadelphia goodbye, we wouldn't be sitting here now talking about whom we're going to talk about. But he was the key player. I want to just tell you this in parentheses. You want to see what life is like? Nobody is irreplaceable. No one is indispensable. People who are balai gaiva think to themselves, and I don't want to go redo all my divrei Torah, but hakina, hakavad v'ataiva motzinet onman olam, you know my divrei Torah on it. When you're young, you think, Josh, without me, the world cannot go on. So you see, there were tremendous articles in Friday's Maariv and Makor Rishon, not in Yediot, but in those two, I believe, in Haaretz as well, that a first new synagogue, the most glorious, most beautiful, most magnificent synagogue, has been dedicated in Manhattan. The first time there's a new building for shul in over 50 years. Lincoln Square Synagogue moves into its new location, a $50 million building. The description is fabulous. Not one word about Rabbi Steve Rispin. Unbelievable. But Morty, that is life. And I want to tell you, I have critique in Rabbi Rispin. Don't think I agree with everything with Hafkat Kedushin. We're worlds apart. But I have a critique of Rabbi Rispin, believe me. But you got to admire, quote, HaGrach, who I spoke about yesterday, my classmate, Dr. Grach, Hagon Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, quote, end quote, of my father's students, the greatest builder of Torah, Rabbi Steve Rispin. Not one word of him. Okay, now let's come back. Here is Bernard Leventhal, but they need the right man. It's a miracle. If you don't believe in Hashgacha Pratit, there's no way to explain what happened. And let me tie in my personal miracle with the real miracle. Why did I want a doctorate? I don't know. I wanted a doctorate. I had two masters. It was like natural thing to do. I was in the rabbinate. Balabatim swallow rabbis. But they choke on doctors a little harder than they do on rabbis. So I wanted a doctorate. No, did all the coursework, and I have to give Mr. Abrams credit, Zichrono Levracha. There was one class I yet needed, and he sent in Rabbi Raphael Marcus, Zichrono Zeicher Tzadik Levracha, would take my class one morning a week so I could finish up my graduate school work at Bernard Revel. And why you paid him? I didn't pay him. I'm always marketed like that. Why you felt it's good for us if Rothkopf gets a doctorate. All right, you finish your coursework, or you're about to finish your coursework, and there was a lady who ran the graduate school. They came up with a title for her that no one has ever had. I write about her in Washington, Mrs. Pearl Carden Zichrono Tzadeket Levracha. She was called the recorder of the graduate school. Why the recorder? She was the administrator, the secretary, because Bernard Lander, who was dean of the graduate school, you follow me, Moshe? Bernard Lander was, if you knew Bernard Lander, he was doing three things at once. Had you studied Washington, I have a description of him in there. Three things at once. You can't be a good administrator if you're doing three things at once. So Mrs. Carden administered the graduate school, and she was called the recorder. And Pearl Carden, who was a crippled lady, I think widowed, must have been at the time in her late 50s. I bless her memory. She says to me, Arnold, have you gone about getting a topic for your doctorate? You're going to be like all the other rabbis. They finish the coursework and they never do their doctorate. You know, a dissertation is that's the real work, the coursework, big deal. So I go to Rabbi Lander, I say, Rabbi Lander, Dr. Lander, and why you, for whatever the reasons are, if you have a doctorate, you call Dr. Belkin, Dr. Revel, Dr. Lander. In Rakefet's world, the fact that you have a doctorate, it's a very small matter. The fact that you're a Rav is infinitely more important. So I go to Dr. Lander, and I say, Dr. Lander, you know, Mrs. Carden is bothering me. I've done most of my coursework. I have one or two courses left. I'd like to come up with a thesis that I should start working on. It'll take years. He says, Arnold, think about our project and get back to me. We'll think about it too. 2 weeks later, I go into Rabbi Revel, Rabbi Lander, Dr. Lander. I better get it right, Dr. Lander. And I say to Bernie, I got to know him as Bernie afterwards, but now I'm still Arnold, and he's Dr. Lander. I say to Dr. Lander, here, I give him a whole paper with my whole outline. Dimitsev, who I spoke about yesterday in class, Daniels, give Eidat Nemana that the class sent it around Reb Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, Reb Heschel Leib yesterday. So, and I give a whole outline. He says, let me present it to the faculty. We'll get back to you. Within a few days, I get a note that Dr. Lander wants to see me Thursday morning, this and this time. I come across, you know, across the street from the yeshiva building to the graduate school building. These buildings, these little buildings that were on Amsterdam Avenue next to the main building don't exist anymore. They were built after World War II with government money, because there were a lot of veterans coming, and somehow you got government money to build these buildings. So I come in to see Dr. Lander, and Dr. Lander says to me, Arnold, your topic was okay, but we have something else in mind for you. I'm quoting him now word by word. We were looking for someone who can handle rabbinic literature as a Talmud Chacham, and could do a proper doctorate on the person for whom the graduate school is named, Dr. Bernard Revel. And we hope you're the right person. And with that, he gets up from his desk and he walks over to me, puts his hands around my shoulder, and he says, Arnold, remember, this was my Rebbe. Nothing is left of him in the world. His children did not marry. what you do will be the only monument he will have. Do a fabulous job. And with that, Bernie Lander breaks down and cries. We relived it many years later in the Willie Coleman Yerushalayim when we were waiting for him. People asked me, how do you know Bernie Lander was Shabbos morning lunch? I told them the story and I broke down and cried exactly where he cried. 10 minutes later, he walks in and he says, Arnold, do you remember when we first met, our conversation? And he retells the conversation and breaks down and cries exactly where he cried more than 40 years earlier. My mother always told me that her mother's family, Kovna, what a family, and told me stories about her her great-grandfather, her grandfather. My mother, I'm talking about, my mother's grandfather. And what a family, and what Mesirat Nefesh for Torah, and what Yichus, and never Mechalel Shabbos, and wealthy, and he was an architect, and he wouldn't build the church, and anyone who worked for him was not allowed to work on Shabbat, even Goyim who worked for him. And I always used to listen with one ear. And my mother would pronounce the name of the family Kavarsky. And we had cousins, Calvin. I always used to wonder, how the heck do I get cousins with a Protestant name? The only difference being they spoke with a K, K-A-L-V-I-N, Calvin, Calvin. And I always was asking, who, what, when, where? All right. I never really checked it out because, to be honest with you, what's more important is who you are, but not who you descend from. But I always held in the back of my mind the Kalvarsky family. When I did the research and started writing Washington, I again went to my mother and Zichrono Levracha, got the exact spelling, how they spelt it, a few more details. And I was walking through the Geula area and I see a book being sold, Yassar Yisruni, Yitzchak Elchanan, Gibraltar, Pirkei Hod, Shvivim V'Zichronot, Al Havai HaYehudi V'Chayai HaRuach Shel Ir Kovna B'Tif Artar. And I decided, an interesting book, memoirs. Then I checked out who this Gibraltar is. He was close to 100 at the time. He was from a very key family and lived in Bnei Brak. And I start going into the book, and you can check it out. I go page by page, and suddenly I see pictures of Dr. Revel. And it turns out that the Revel family and the Kalvarsky family, or as they pronounced it in Kovna, Kalvarisky, intermarried. And it turns out I went into all the details. I called, I spoke with Yitzchak Elchanan in Gibraltar. Then I wrote to him and I made a mistake of writing on my stationery here, which mentions YU. I don't think after that he was too happy. Bnei Brak. I don't have to go into more details. My dear students, it turns out that my doctorate and all that I did in my life, writing about Rabbi Revel, I was writing about my own cousin. And I dealt with Hebrew University people. Can I depend upon Gibraltar? Is he reliable? Absolutely. Kalvarsky or Kalvarisky, as they pronounced it, he told me, one and the same families. It solved another problem for me. In my work on Rabbi Revel, I pleaded with Mrs. Revel, give me a good picture of you and your husband. And the finest picture she could give me, and it appears in Bernard Revel, is a picture of Rabbi Revel and Mrs. Revel in Galveston, Texas, on the boardwalk. And I often wondered, what was Rabbi Revel doing in Galveston, Texas? If you go into the volume by Yitzchak Elchanan Gibraltar, you get the answer. Because the Revel family wound up in America, a good part of it, and part of the family did very well in business in Galveston, Texas. And that's where Rabbi Revel visited his cousins in Galveston. And that's where the picture was taken. There's a sad ending to this little story. I got so excited. I mean, it was like when I discovered this information three years ago. So it's well over 40 years from the time that I was introduced to Rabbi Revel. And I wanted to tell Dr. Lander. And I made a terrible mistake. I found this information, let's say March. And I said, you know, instead of calling, instead of writing, instead of contacting, I'm going to be in America during the summer. Whenever I was in America, I used to go to Touro College, visit with my Talmud, the Vice President, Rabbi Moshe Kripke, and of course, visit with the man, the visionary, Rabbi Dr. President Bernard Landau. I said, let me wait till the summer. Morty, he died before the summer. And I never got to tell him that his Rebbe was my cousin. Okay? And now we begin. A lot more than what I published, because when you write about somebody, I think you sensed that yesterday in class, that the Netziv working on the Shiltat, it wasn't the Netziv working on the Shiltat. The Netziv felt himself part of the Shiltat. When you recreate someone, when you resuscitate someone, you revive someone, your lives intermingle. And here it is, my own cousin. Bernard Revel, 1885-1940. Story of his life is worthy of a movie. His father was Reb Nachum Shraga Revel, was a Litvish Rav, the Prina Rav, which was a suburb of Kovna. His father was friendly with the Kovna Rav, Reb Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. Father married twice. First wife died, and this was quite common in Europe. It may have to deal with childbirth, with weaknesses, with the germs in the air. Today you meet women, I've met women, particularly in the Lubavitch world. It's so inspiring to see how they solve the problem of feminism. I don't know if you know, there's a Shluchat conference right now. And I just saw a video from some other conference in my office. Someone sent me a link. And you can meet women, 12 children, and they look like they just stepped out of high school, the mothers. And you got to give Chabad credit. And she's the shlucha. And you should hear the way she speaks. And you should see the knowledge. But in Europe, lo aleinu, life was not as medically advanced as today, and many times people marry twice. You'll see this all the time, that the wife died after four children. Anyway, Rabbi Revel's father, Reb Nachum Shraga, from his first wife, he had a son, Moshe Yitzchak. Moshe Yitzchak emigrated to the United States. In America, he changed his name to Morris. Morris had a son, Nelson Gluck. Do you remember? Do you recognize the name? Revel became Gluck in America. Whatever the reasons were, it could be to use a different passport, to get a visa, to get in, to be accepted. The name was Gluck. G-L-U-E-C-K. Gluck. Mazel could be. They liked the name Mazel. You need muscle in life. Recognize the name Nelson Gluck? President of Hebrew Union College, which we spoke about yesterday in great depth. Spoke about Professor Samuel Atlas. Where did he teach? HUC. So that Rabbi Revel, who was a son of his second wife was a half-brother to Morris and was the uncle of Nelson Gluck. Could you imagine? And you should know that this plays a role in life, because Nelson Gluck, a Reformed rabbi, later in life gets divorced, had no need for a get. She didn't need a get. He didn't care. Why do I have to give her a get? What did we learn about yesterday? Dinner de Malchuta dinner. The court divorces you? That's all that counts. Rabbi Revel pleaded with his nephew, you must give a get, because Chas v'Chalila, if she has children from a second marriage, they are going to be absolute, total, complete mamzerim. And he finally gave a get. But it's unbelievable that the president of Yeshiva University today and the president of Hebrew Union College, they were not just related. Rabbi Revel was the uncle of Dr. Nelson Gluck. Yitzchak, did you know that? It's unbelievable, unbelievable. Now,
how long did he serve as president?
For decades. What are you talking about? When we were kids growing up, he was still there. Well into the 50s. Way beyond Rabbi Revel. Well into the 50s. May have been even into the 60s. Check it out. Could be at that famous dinner where they honored, I believe it was Gluck, Finkelstein, and Dr. Belkin. And remember, there was a tremendous outcry. This is already in our time, in the early 60s. And then Yeshiva had to make a whole dinner for Rabbi Belkin to show they stand behind him. And Rav Zaks was there, etc. Very Rav Mendel Zaks, Dr. Belkin's Rebbe from Rotten. A lot of politics passed between the major dinner. This was after the Cherem. I don't have to tell you, the right wing, all that happened in America. We'll get to it, but not today. That's for sure. Rabbi Revel, who was a genius. Kid was 12 years old. Father died. Little kid got up on a box, eulogized his father. Photographic memory. Learned in the Kovna Batei Medrash. Didn't go to yeshiva. And remember, this was still a time when we explained weeks ago the Batei Medrash were filled with students. Who needs a yeshiva? Everyone was learning. Everyone had a chavrita. Everyone had a rebbe. Who needs a yeshiva? And he went for one term. He went to Tells. There were all types of traditions why he left Tells. I don't want to go into all the details. Some are positive, some are negative, but I'll give you my take on Rabbi Revel, having lived Baruch Hashem a full life and having met many people in my life, including many geniuses. Geniuses find it hard to live in a normal environment. To be a genius and to be able to get along with average people, that's a great achievement. This is why I go back to Lakewood, the Yiddish they taught me. I remember I've told you over the decades, time and again, they taught me one concept in Yiddish. They used to say about certain Talmidim, as a normala, he's normal. Took me a while to understand what they were saying, but Lakewood had a whole cadre in my time, the early 50s, of the Alta Kletzka, who survived the war, who gathered around Rebarim. Some of these people were geniuses. Lushas, Paiskin, by heart, backwards, forwards. Some were not normal. Geniuses. The few that were normal, to be a genius and to be normal, it's a tremendous challenge. It's not easy. And this affects your entire life, because the fact that you didn't learn in the yeshiva, you weren't in a structured environment, You don't know how to deal with a structured environment. I can tell you the Rav, for instance, he never learned in a yeshiva. They're genius. This may account why he was such a perfectionist, why he was so sharp with students, why he couldn't tolerate human foibles until he mellowed. But that's all part of genius. We spoke about Rav Chaim Soloveitchik yesterday, Dr. Grach, and his critique of the Rabbat of Poskier. Do you follow me, Moshe? Who can measure up to Rav Chaim? It's very hard to be extremely bright and to be one of the boys. I think you understand what I'm saying. He was in Telz a half year. He didn't fit in. He was too bright. He knew too much. He had too good a mind. But he always had a soft spot for Telz. And Yitzchak can testify, along with yours truly, that in our time in the yeshiva, Telz had two rabbeim that we knew of. Rabbi Volk, Rabbi Honest. Before our time, there was a Telzer in the yeshiva, Rabbi Burak. Remember Rabbi Burak, Aaron David Burak? Rabbi Rebel had a soft spot for Telz. That half year left such an impression that when the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Bloch and Rav Katz, Rebellia Bloch, and they were stuck in America. Remember, they had come for fundraising, and they wind up in America. Rabbi Rebel wanted to bring them into the yeshiva. There would have never been a Telz in Cleveland. He wanted to bring them in. He had that feeling for Telz. They refused. They wanted to go out on their own, and of course, the rest is history. But it's fascinating that he always had a preferential feeling for Telz. He got smicha at the age of 16. Who he got smicha from, we don't know. It's like the Rav. No one knows for sure who the Rav got smicha from. I have my theories. No one knows for sure who the Lubavitcher Rebbe got smicha from. You all know, I showed you documents, what was it, last year? Or this year, I forget already. That the Rebbe, at least we have now strong foundation to believe he got smicha from the Sri Dayesh. But smicha got 16. And then there's a period of his life where he becomes a Bundist. What was the Bund? B-U-N-D, the General Jewish Worker Alliance of Russia, Poland, and Lithuania. And here we need a little elaboration. Gentlemen, have you ever been young? You know, what does it mean to be young? I was young. What does it mean to be young? In my time, Bnei Akiva, Israel, Meir Kahana, never again, Russian Jewry. Oh boy, we had causes. We grew up, you know, the who the heck gave a hoot about, what's it called, Super Sunday. By the way, what a disgrace for American technology with hundreds and hundreds of millions of eyes looking at this ball game. The electricity breaks down. Do you know what happened last night? 5:30 million. People were walking in cursing mad. They had to leave before the game was over because Nebuchadnezzar had to daven. So the 5:30 minyan, I couldn't believe it. Professor Gaffney walks in. He's upgehitzt, as gazed. Boy, was he upset. And he's talking with Sam Dershowitz, and they're comparing. Oh, we finished it. And it was a tight game. And why you ran halftime Torah messages. Boy, it's a different world. Yitzchak, believe me, I couldn't handle it. football, man cooked on football, man the hocket ended the andera. You're killing each other, punching around. What are you, this Baba Kama? Shoshanaga Chetapara? What's going on here? The Chifat, Beitot, Shane, Regal, Moshe, what is it? The Gemara coming to life? But it's a different world today. What can I tell you? So, if you're young, you're young. People told me, who lived the era, if you were not a, I'll use language you'll understand, if you were not a communist in your youth, you were not young. Gedolei Yisrael, I don't want to mention names. I know one name that I don't know how many other people know, that Jacob Dinstock, Zecher Tzadik, Zichrono Levracha, who was a tremendous maluma, the Rav HaDerech Eretz Frem, he was the librarian of Gottesman, that Jacob Dinstock, he too was a Bundist in his youth. What a dream. What a dream. Sam, it is terrible that you have a bank account of $1 million or 1 million sterling or 1 million, whatever you have, and Moshe barely has $100 to his name. Is that fair? Well, why are you any better than Moshe? No, no. Come on. Let's be honest. He works on it. Brian, what kind of life is this that you have 10 children and the guy who has 2 children makes 10 times what you make? It's unfair. Communism, each according to his abilities, each according to his needs. We all work for the great corporate state. We are proud to be citizens of the world. We contribute what we can. I'm a Rebbe, you're a rocket scientist, you're a medical doctor, you're a military genius. Then we take what we need. I have 10 children, this guy has 2 children. Communism, fabulous. Socialism, beautiful. The Jews got involved, not just involved, the Jews were among the leaders, Marx. Lenin had a Jewish grandfather. Engels, Jewish. Trotsky, Bornstein, Trotsky. It's an amazing thing that Trotsky's grandson lives in Hebron. Isn't that unbelievable? Went back to the name Bornstein. Unbelievable that out of Trotsky, endless kids running around, direct descendants, Shomrei Torah and Mitzvot. Ashrenu Shazachinu Lekach. Now, Rabbi Rebbe was an idealist. Now, I've been asked this question 1,000 times. Did he leave religion? I don't know. We don't know. I did check with people who lived the era. You could have been a Bundist and remained religious. There was not necessarily a contradiction, although generally there was. And when you read the memoir literature, if you recall my lectures on the Novadic Yeshiva, Yoni, were you in my class about 10, 12 years ago, 15 years ago, I can't even remember. So in my lectures on Novadic Yeshiva, when people question why such extreme methods to go into a drugstore and ask for potatoes, to go into Machne Yehuda where they're selling potatoes and ask for akamol, why such extreme methods? Because the times called for it. Yeshiva boys went home for Shabbos, and by Sunday they never put tefillin on again. Someone caught them up with socialism, idealism, Bundesism, afterwards communism. They threw it all away. Or there were people. You should know that the first government after the revolution had a minister of finance who was a Shomer Shabbos. They weren't yet total communists. He later is exiled and winds up in Brooklyn, dies in America. A Shomer Shabbos Jew. So there wasn't necessarily a total contradiction. But that he was a Bundist, this is absolutely so. How do I know it's absolutely so? Because in the Revel Archives, I found a manuscript of a eulogy that his son, Rabbi Dr. Herschel Revel, Zichrono Livracha, had given, at least I thought, in Baltimore. I later found out that that memorial on Shloshim in Baltimore was a YU city. All the Rabbanim in Baltimore were YU Mismachim. It was a YU city. Hard to believe today when if a kid says he's going to YU, they tar and feather him and put him into a pit, cover it up, and barely give him food and water to drink. Going to YU? Nay, Yisrael is down the block. What are you, a Shagetz, an Eisvaf? But then YU was, Nay, Yisrael wasn't big yet, and it wasn't like today. And Baltimore was a YU city. Rabbi Levy, Rabbi Drazen, one rabbi after another. Give an endless list. The hesped was never given. I'm told it snowed, and it snowed out. There was the Shloshim, and the Shloshim fell in January 1941. The hesped was never given. But what's amazing about the hesped, he typed it out, and he, with a pencil, he crossed out a few words. I erased the pencil crossouts. Even as a kid doing my research for my doctorate, I already was a member of the Mossad. I crushed it out, and I saw he writes about that Rabbi Revel was not only great in Torah, but he fought for social justice and was a member of the Bund and was arrested. And Mrs. Revel constantly told me that he was arrested in 1905. I checked it out. I did my research. And lo and behold, 1905, there was one of the revolutions against the Tsar. The Tsar hated the Bundists, the socialists. These movements, whoever they could catch, their leaders, they hung them from the nearest tree. The enmity, 1905 in Kovna, just what Mrs. Revel said, hundreds were arrested, among them tens and tens members of the Bundist movement. And if you recall Washington, that's the story I tell, that I was doing research on this at the YIVO Archive Center. Today, I believe YIVO doesn't exist. I think it's all part of the YU Museum. That whole area has all the archives, but I may be wrong, but I know YIVO merged with some other organizations over the years. YIVO was the Yiddish material. They had archives from Europe, from the Bundist newspapers, and I'm doing research, and I find in the Yiddish newspapers of that era, sure enough, major arrests, hundreds thrown into jail, exactly what Mrs. Revel told me. And sitting in the YIVO library, this woman, I would see people like her again in Russia, this Jewish woman is sitting there. I was a kid in my 20s. She was in her 70s, white hair, perched up, no makeup, simple dress. This is a communist. This is a believer. And this Jewish woman is looking at me and a kippah on my head, and she's burning up, and finally she can't control herself. People like you kept the Tsar in power. You made a mishabarach for him. And with anger, she tells me off, and I look at her, lady, what the hell are you talking about? I'm born in New York. I'm a third generation American. I grew up next to Yankee Stadium. What do you want out of me? I never saw the Tsar in my life. I never was in Russia, and I never made a mishabarach for the Tsar. But in retrospect, I understand exactly. The kippah was a magnet, a counterfoil. How could a Jew still wear a kippah? continue the traditions of making a Mishabelach for the president and the vice president and all the secretary of state of the United. Have you ever gone into a shul and they list out everybody? Let's make a Mishabelach for Medinat Yisrael, and that Netanyahu should be privileged to have a government, and the government should be privileged to live up to our quest. Hashiva Shavteinu Karishona B'Yatzayach Kavatachila. Oh, Chalafai, we should be Saicha. That's what we should make a Mishabelach for. But that woman in Russia, I saw women like her. 1981, the real communists, fabulous people. Gentlemen, you'd be the happiest guys alive if you had wives like that. They wore a simple dress, no makeup, no perfume, simplicity, the masses, the state, equality. Everyone has to share. Brian, you'd be a very happy guy if you were married to a pure communist. Eishet chayil miyim tzach. V'rachok mipinim. Mipinimim? Jewelry? Chas v'chalila. Now more you can understand why communism went under. In theory, it is beautiful, but humans can't live that way. Wow. Okay, Danny called the Rebbe a prophet, 100%. What did he tell you yesterday afternoon outside the elevator as I was leaving after the shir? I told you Netanyahu has a real problem. He's dealing with a party that can't compromise. Did you hear the news at 8 o'clock this morning? First item, Netanyahu's people quoting Rakefet. Netanyahu has never, quote unquote, never had it so hard because he's dealing with a party that cannot compromise its principles. Quote unquote. Everything I told you last night, I was there first. Gentlemen, he goes to jail, he gets out of jail, and he has half brothers and half sisters and brothers in America. The rebel family has gone to America. What is he going to remain behind in Russia? He's wanted by the police. And in 1906, Rabbi Revel is one of the hundreds of thousands of Jews who come through Ellis Island seeking their fortune, seeking their future. All of, how old was he? 1985. 21 years old, all of 21 years old. And here, imagine barely having English, a greenhorn, a few cents in his pocket at most. Imagine if someone had tapped him on the shoulders and said, Beryl, Dov is Beryl, you should know that in 1986, the United States government will issue a stamp with your picture on it. The 100th anniversary of Yeshiva University, Eitz Chaim, 1986, the United States government. I happened to be in America at the time, and it was a very funny incident, because here I am with all the important people and the head of the Postmaster Service, the Postmaster General of the United States, is the key speaker. They're issuing the $1 Bernard Revel stamp, and he's reading from my book on Bernard Revel. And they introduced me to him, and I don't know why. They think that all authors of books are dead, are gone, like he was flabbergasted. Wow, the author of Bernard Revel is here. He's alive. He's warm. And that was 1986. Now, Rabbi Rebbe comes through. What does he do? No, I told you. All the greenhorns came through. They had an address to go to. Yeshivas, Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan on the east side, and Kensitzim, and Kalernin. And until you acclimate, till you adjust, till you learn a little bit English, you'll improve your English, and you'll feel at home in Kentucky Davenin. And he goes to the yeshiva and he sits down and he's learning, and they see, wow, photographic memory. Rabbi Revel knew all of Shas, all of Tosfot by heart. I heard this not just from one or two people. I heard it from people who, like Reb Shmuel Lazer Volk, who really, you know, these guys didn't give a compliment. You got to understand, this was a different era. They didn't give a compliment to anyone. But on Rabbi Revel, Reb Shmuel Lazer Volk told me every line in Tosfot he knew by heart. Look who's visiting the yeshiva on a weekly basis. Who is the main figure from the administration? Reb Dov Aryeh HaKohen Leventhal. Rabbi Leventhal meets Rabbi Revel, and he is overwhelmed. And he tells Rabbi Revel, what are you wasting your time for? You already know all of Shas and Peskim. You have to go to school. You have to Americanize. You have to get advanced degrees. You have to learn what America is. Come with me to Philadelphia. You'll live in my house. You will be my assistant. And sure enough, Rabbi Revel winds up in Philadelphia in the home of Rav Dov Aryeh HaKohen Leventhal. As I told you, Rabbi Leventhal is the kingmaker. He starts going to university. 1909, he gets a master's from NYU. Perhaps he's not yet on the map. You're running ahead of yourself. A master's. What does he write? And first of all, he knows English. Writes in English. Master's English. Rabbi Revel was a genius. Studied. Geniuses stutter. It's amazing. When he spoke, he was fabulous. In private conversation, they used to tell me, he pat someone on the shoulder. I told you that the Shtiblacher, Dr. Professor Chaim Weizmann, went after me. All the rabbeim are being accused, you know, I don't want to mention names, but Weizmann has been accused of. And he said, Reb Aaron, I heard about you. You used to pat kids to see if they're wearing tzitzit. You also were, I said, you got the wrong guy. I said, but it is true. Rabbi Revel, everyone used to tell me, go to get patted. You have tzitzits. Hayolach vilzen. No. You have tzitzits. He studied. When he spoke, the Rav studied. When the Rav spoke, fabulous. Meir Kahana studied. Not when he spoke. It's an amazing thing. Anyone here who can explain it, goes into speech, you can explain it. There's a lot of research done. But he was a stutterer. NYU, English. What he does his master's on becomes very fascinating in the little world involving yours truly and Reb Nesson Kamenetsky. And I'll introduce you to Making of a Gadol now and give you a sideshow. He wrote his master's on Chovat HaLevavot. Chovat HaLevavot is one of the most basic svarim, Rabachya, even Pakuda. For instance, the Rav was a great fan of Chovat HaLevavot. I didn't hear the Rav quote Mesilat Yesharim or Orchat Chaim, but I heard the Rav quote Orchat Sadikim, correct, thank you. I never heard the Rav quote those two svarim. Maybe Mesilat Yesharim once. I heard the Rav quote Chovat HaLevavot time after time again. Okay. Now, how does this come into Rakefet versus Kamenetsky? And perhaps Reb Nesson is right, and I'm only partially right. How does this come in? Because he wrote his thesis on Musa. Later, when he becomes the Rosh Yeshiva, he brings in a Mashgiach. And the first Mashgiach in the Yeshiva is Reb Yehuda Weil. I yet knew people who knew him. He died, I believe, in the late 40s. It was right before I entered the yeshiva. He was a tzaddik yisoid olam. You'll hear in a minute. People, a little man, they used to tell me, if you want to know what Tzidkut is, you had to have known the little Chafetz Chaim, they called him. So I said that evidently, I write this in my thesis, later published, evidently, Rabbi Revel, growing up in Kovna, was influenced by the Musa movement in Kovna. That's where Rabbi Yitzchak Blaza, that's where they had a kollel, that's where you had the main Musa individuals, Rabbi Naftali Amsterdam, Rabbi Yitzchak Blaza, Kovna was Kovna. So perhaps that's why he wrote his thesis on Bachya, and that's why he had a mashgiach in the yeshiva. And remember, we're talking today, the week after it has been officially announced that a Talmud of Aaron Rakefin in DMT is now the new mashgiach of Yeshivas Rav Tzalchanan, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, the Eish Kodesh Rebbe. So, if you open up Making of a Gadol, beginning on page 502, Reb Nassim Kamenetsky takes issue with the Satmar paper Deyid. Deyid had a convoluted article, it's like Rav HaKolel, like Landau's work, where they claim that why was Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Chanan named Ritz? Because it was an anti-Musa yeshiva. And Reb Yitzchak Chanan was one of those who opposed Musa, which is a fascinating topic unto itself. I dealt with it at great length many years ago. Why Gedolei Yisrael, like Reb Chaim Brisker, and Reb Yitzchak Chanan Spector, and Reb Shmuel Danishevsky, why did they oppose Musa? But they did. They felt that the best Musa is a Daf Gemara. So the Yid had this article. That's a lot of baloney. They named the yeshiva Reb Yitzchak Chanan because Reb Yitzchak Chanan died that very year in 1896, and the yeshiva was formed, Ritz was formed 1897, it's charted. So he's absolutely right, Reb Nassim. Then he goes in to yeshivas Reb Yitzchak Chanan. Was it a Musa yeshiva? And he quotes a guy named Rothkopf. And he says he contacted Rothkopf. And he asked him, who's the mashgiach you're referring to? Rabbi Rothkopf clarified to the author that the mashgiach to whom he referred is Rabbi Yehuda Weil, born in 1861, and a Talmud of the Raton Yeshiva, who served as mashgiach in Ritz from the time of his arrival in the United States, 1921, until his demise in 1948. It is true that Rabbi Weil was highly praised as the giant of the spirit of Tzadik Tamim, our Chafetz Chaim, and on variations of this theme by Rabbi Rothkopf as the small Chafetz Chaim, and by Dr. Samuel Belkin as the Chafetz Chaim of America, who never raised his voice, and that when he saw a boy with a hole in his shoe, he would slip him a dollar for money raised on his own for poor yeshiva boys. It is also said of him that his understanding and love for the yeshiva students were boundless. And this was what I was told about this little man, Rabbi Yehuda Weil. He has descendants who are B'nai Torah today. I've met them. I've taught them, actually. But Reb Nassim Kamenetsky says, Rothkopf is wrong. This does not make a Musa yeshiva. That you have a mashgiach? Voloshin had a mashgiach. Mir had a mashgiach 150 years ago. But these mashgiach, what was their role? They were the registrars. They were the administrators. They were there to see that students came on time, that they didn't wander in, If we had a mashgiach here at 9 o'clock, I would walk into the room, 30 people would be sitting here from the yeshiva, not outsiders. We don't have a mashgiach. No mashgiach, hefker. And what's a rekefer do? The students are older than he is. You have to understand that. They'll beat the heck out of the rebbe. Gotta bite your lips and be proud that at least thousands are listening across the world. And I want to say good morning to them. Okay, fine. That's not a mashgiach. That's a Mr. Abrams. Okay? That's a Rabbi Reis. Rabbi Chalab. Okay? Ah. When did Reis become a real Mr. Yeshiva? When they brought in my father's Chavrut, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky's friend from Slabatka. Who was that, of course? Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson, 1944. He already was a mashgiach. His job was not to take attendance. His task was not to see that the students were there. He was there to give sichat musa shmurasin, to lead va'adim in musa, that Yitzchak and I grew up in. All right, you know something? There's a little truth in what Rothkopf said, but there's more truth in what Reb Nosson said. I officially bow to Reb Nosson Kamenetsky. There's a lot more here. He is a very fascinating writer, and he does his research. Every syllable that Reb Nosson mentions is footnoted. He gives you the source. Now, here is Rabbi Revel. That's his masters. At this time in the United States of America, Philadelphia is the center of it all. It's an amazing story because Philadelphia today, Mandachar Shmei, center of what? New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Detroit, infinitely more than Philadelphia. But 100 years ago plus, Philadelphia was the heartbeat of the Jewish civilization. There was a famous individual, Moshe Aaron Dropsy, who had made a lot of money, and he was an observant Jew, and he left money to organize a college, a postgraduate school for advanced study of Jewish and cognate subjects. And lo and behold, such a college was organized in Philadelphia. It was non-denominational. It's nothing to do with JTS or any yeshiva, but it's an institute for advanced scientific Jewish scholarship. Rabbi Bernard Revel is living in Philly, assisting Rabbi Leventhal. He has his master's. You have a master's? Nothing is more logical than to study for a doctorate. And in 1912, Rabbi Bernard Revel becomes the first graduate getting a PhD from Dropsy College. Today, Dropsy College no longer exists. It amalgamized with the University of Pennsylvania Graduate School of Judaic Studies. So that Dropsy College today is part of the graduate division of U of P. Bernard Revel, the first graduate, the first PhD. His PhD, I quote, later published by Dropsy, the Karai Halacha and its relationship to Sadducean, Samaritan, and Philonian Halacha. And what is this talking about? What is this talking about? It's a very fascinating topic. It's a topic that became the focal point of Rabbi Rebel's scholarly life, the focal point of Rabbi Belkin's scholarly life. Gentlemen, we live with Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. You take the Karaites. They have no Torah Shebaalpeh, so they say. So how do they explain passages in the Torah? K'shatam liyot al yedecha v'ayu letot afot bein inecha. U'lekachtam lechem b'yom harishon priyetz hadah. Give me an explanation. Lo tamaru eish b'chom oshpotechem. Al yetzayish bin komo. How do you explain it? Shofa. What do you blow? What's the Seder? What's the order? Kiyach from Truah. Truah. Shvarim. So you see, it's impossible to pass on a religion without a Torah Shebaalpeh. And all of you know, at times, the Karaites or the Sadducees lived like Jews. At times, they didn't. If you go into a Jewish house on Shabbos, you're overwhelmed by the smell of challant. You go into a Karaite house, if there'd be a smell of challant, they would call them an apikoros. Lo tefarash, there can't be a fire in your house on Shabbat. And it's a very fascinating topic. Where do they differ? How do they differ? Is there a Torah Shebaalpeh? What develops with the oral tradition in the Sadducees or the Karaites, etc.? The Philonians is altogether a fascinating topic because they differ too at times. Do they differ out of theology or do they differ out of ignorance? And you all know that Rabbi Belkin, what he did publish on the Philo and his followers, Rabbi Belkin claims that they were within and not without. And he tries to explain, wherever they differ, their reasons why. But it's a fascinating topic. This is what he wrote his doctorate on. So now, you have in the United States of America a cousin of Aaron Rakefet, a genius in learning, Shas and Poskim, by heart. Like, you know, people know by heart. Shas Kohen, I don't have to go any further. I know him. It's my son-in-law's Rebbe. Knows every line in Tosfot. By heart. You have a genius who now is fluent in English, a master's, a PhD from Dropson. Well, how do you go further? And here we come to the most important chapter in his life, with great implications for the later history of the yeshiva. We come, of course, Ki Yikach Ish Isha. And here I have to relate, and I do this with a great sense of historical accuracy and responsibility, in a conversation with Reb Moshe Bick. I trust you all recognize the name. If you don't, check out who he was, so the ignorant pass for the wise. Reb Moshe Bick of the Neshbitz Bick dynasty. Ur Einiklach of Reb Yaakov Emden, Siddiq Yichus, family that comes to America around World War I, after World War I. His uncle was my mother-in-law's rabbi on East New York. Reb Moshe Bick goes to what today is YU, gets smicha, becomes the Rav of the Bronx, and later, of course, in Borough Park, Posek Mufak. So in a conversation with Reb Moshe Bick, when I was working on my doctorate, and getting information on Rabbi Revel. He was a Talmud. So he breaks into a broad smile. He was a tremendous human being, Rav Moshe Pick. I told you, tremendous respect for women. He was ahead of his times. He was totally Hasidish. You looked at him, but really ahead of his times. And he says to me, that was the first shidduch done in America, a real shidduch. And the story is as follows, and it was a real shidduch. Story is as follows. Rabbi Leventhal housed his housebacher, we'll call him. All the rabbanim who visit Rabbi Leventhal get to meet Rabbi Revel. They are impressed. One of the rabbanim, a very famous name, also descendants until today, Shermit Torah Mitzvah, Rabbi Binyamin Zivitz of Pittsburgh. He was impressed, Rabbi Zivitz. These were big Talmid Chachamim. Now, in Marietta, Ohio, there was a small Jewish community, but there were some very frum people living there. We're talking 110, 120 years ago. Dr. Muscat, Solomon Muscat, was a medical doctor, a Shomer Torah Mitzvah. His great-grandchildren studied here, right here in this color. You've heard the name Rabbi Jonathan Muscat. There are others. You should recognize it. Oceanside. Direct descendants. There was another family there, the Travis family, direct descendants of Rashi, Triage, where Rashi came from, Travis, very wealthy, in the petroleum business, very frum, Marietta, Ohio. But the community wasn't big enough to have a Rav. So a few times a year, Rabbi Zivitz would visit Marietta, Ohio, to take care of the rabbinic needs, the Paskin Shilas, to give a few sermons. Pittsburgh wasn't that far. They're ready with trains. In the Travis family, among their children, there was a young girl. She was born Pashat Chayasar. So they called her Chayasar. Chayasara. She was a very frum girl, went to public school, and had real deep frumkeit in her. No, Dr. Muscat, Rabbi Zivitz, all knew about Rabbi Revel. They made a shidduch. Sarah Travis, lovely lady, frum, well-to-do family, you understand? Torah and money, often intermarry. I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's a reality. That's a reality. They brought Rabbi Revel out to Marietta, Ohio. Thanksgiving Day, 1908. They got engaged. And June 1909, check the exact dates in Revel, they got married. Now, this marriage is very, very important because it gives Rabbi Revel sustenance. They take him into the family business. And after he gets his doctorate, Rabbi and Mrs. Revel wind up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And if you know anything about the oil fields and how they work, you wake up very early, you can't work in the oil fields in the middle of the day, it is too hot. So you wake up 4 o'clock in the morning, you go out to the oil fields, you work, you do what you have to do, midday you're home, and Rabbi Revel in Tulsa, Oklahoma, would sit and learn and write Chidushei Torah and publish in the Yagdil Torah, under a big journal that existed in America, and he was a legendary figure. Talmud Chacham, PhD, wealthy, oil magnate, although the family always objected when anyone called him an oil magnate. He was part of the family which brought him into this tremendous business. Wow. Their marriage was blessed with two children, two sons. Mrs. Trevor always would tell me she couldn't have any more children, whatever the reasons were. I don't have to tell you, but sometimes it's easy to have children, sometimes you have, and then it's not easy, sometimes it's not easy. Humans are created differently, and I need not tell you this is a major medical industry and halachic industry in the state of Israel and elsewhere as well. The eldest son was Norman, was born 1912, and he dabbled in business. Hirschel, who was born a year later, 1913, was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he probably is the first American-born individual to publish a Sefer in learning. He did his doctorate at Bernard Revel, later became Bernard Revel Graduate School. His doctorate, does anyone know, on Hilchot Sota of the Rambam. And he put together a proper reading, everything I spoke about yesterday. How do you get a correct reading? He put together manuscripts. And in addition to a proper reading, you have a perush underneath, which is scientific and also yeshiva type with chidushim and insights. And this may be Otsa HaSota is the name of the sefer. It probably is the first sefer in learning, in lamdus, in learning, in knowledge, in Chachmat Yisrael to be published by an American-born youngster. Unfortunately, neither Norman nor Hirschel had children, married. I want to be scholarly correct. I understand that Hirschel did marry. The marriage did not survive the Sheva Brachos or beyond. It didn't work out. I'll add some Divrei Torah now from the bottom of my heart, because I could never have accomplished my doctorate without the wonderful help of Mrs. Revel and Norman. Hirschel was dead already. He died in 1961. I started contact with the family. Rabbi Lander put me in touch, let's say, about 1963, 64. I'll add, I heard from the Rev. To become a great Rosh Yeshiva, to turn the wheels of Torah, to change the world, you have to pay a terrible price. You have to give up your own family. And the Rav often quoted the Moreh Nevuchim and then developed it further about Moshe Rabbeinu. Everyone was told, Shuvu lechem lo haleichem, and Moshe was told, Po amod imadi, how to leave his wife. And the Rebbe used to say, and it was very moving, very frightening actually, for a young rabbi to hear, that Moshe Rabbeinu, when he becomes Moshe Rabbeinu, Adonai Nevi'im, he could not give his own children 1 minute more time than he could give any other child. All Jewish children are now his responsibility. Poem, Amodi Mati. And we all know the Yakmus Nefesh Moshe had, what became of his grandchildren. Don't want to elaborate. Quote Hashem Hasdedaba, but it's in Chazal. Idol worshippers. couldn't give them one extra minute. Baruch HaTov B'Zman HaCholam Mishkan B'Zman. Rabbi Rebel played a tremendous trice. Mrs. Rebel would tell me time after time how the children would yell at their father, you quote, Tata, you have time for everyone else's children except your own. So you have to, end quote, you have to be aware. Rabbi Rebel became totally, completely, absolutely devoted to Torah Hashem, to building what is today Yeshiva University. On a personal level, he paid a very heavy price. And it's very sad to think that all that remains of the rebels are four graves on Kehilat Jeshurun cemetery property, one next to another, Rabbi Revel, Mrs. Revel, Norman Revel, and Hirshu Revel. And then he modal HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the Hashgacha Pratit brought about that his own cousin, not even knowing of the family connection, devoted his research to his life and a good deal of his publications. Now, let me go one step further and end off for today. You see, a human being, again, is an interesting individual. You have dreams, you have quests. There are various periods in life. I can illustrate it with the Rav very easily. 1935, he travels all the way to Palestine to stand for the chief rabbinate of Tel Aviv. Tremendous trip by boat. The only time he left America, to the best of my knowledge, after he settled in America in 1932. In 1960, the chief rabbinate of Israel is offered to the Rav on a golden platter. Be unanimous. One plane ride. There are already jets at that time. And the Rav turns it down. And a fool will ask, this is not logical. To stand for the chief rabbinate of one city in Israel, he was Maisa Nefesh and he lost. And when he's offered on a silver platter, on a golden platter, the chief rabbinate of the entire state of Israel, which was already 20 times the size in population what it was in 35, he turns it down. It's a terrific question. But only a fool will ask that question. Because in 1935, he was not yet the Rav. He didn't yet have his niche in life. He didn't yet have satisfaction. He was searching, he was hunting, there was plenty not to be happy about in Boston, with all due respect to Rabbi Rubin's parents. 1960, he was older. He was established. He found his place. He found his niche. He turned it down. It's logical. A young man perhaps wants covet, wants titles. An older person knows hevel havalim, titles, shmeitels. A melamed is the biggest title in the world, in my opinion. And I got my opinion from my Rebbe, and I live it. And I have lived it, and I've turned down. I understand what I'm saying. So you have to understand this. 1914, 1913. Where is Rabbi Revel? Tulsa, Oklahoma. All right. It's good to make a living. It's good to have a little money. But this is your life? This is your calling? This is your destiny? This is your lodestar? Everyone knew about him. Rabbi Leventhal, Rabbi Sivitz, Rabbi Rosenberg, Israel Rosenberg. All the makers and shakers of what was to become YU. And they started badgering him. They started bothering him. And I got to tell you, it didn't happen overnight. He has a wife. He has a family. He has children. He has responsibility. You have to make a living. But it was a fabulous family. Sam Travis, his father-in-law, is a real Ben Torah. A fabulous family. And they finally agreed, Rabbi Revel has to move on. God did not create him just to be another oil magnet in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And he accepts the call to the yeshiva, but he puts down one condition. And this condition is unbelievably positive, but also negative. We're adults today. This is a postgraduate class. We're not giving an art scroll lecture. He accepts on condition, no salary, he will not be paid. His family, doing so well in the oil business, agrees to support Rabbi Revel, his wife and children. On one hand, just think for a moment what presidents of yeshiva universities get paid today. Think for one moment, and here's Rabbi Revel, no salary. On an art scroll level, Danny Shulman never heard more inspiring words than he just heard. He's going to call Ruthie right after class and fill her in on the Rebbe being a prophet. That means a shoteh. And he heard my words last night. 8 o'clock in the morning, word by word. They should have said, we want to call the Rav Rakefet, who are Matzah et Mol, Emesh, Utsodek Legamrei, and those close to Bibi. I couldn't believe Baruch Hashem. All right, you have to be a big genius if you've lived here 44 years. You know what's going on. Brian, on an art scroll level, you're inspired. But there's the negative side. You see, because he didn't take a salary, he's dependent on his family. When the family runs into problems because of antitrust actions, which today would get the Rockefellers into jail, but then turn them into the Rockefellers, I write about it in Revel. He has to go back to Tulsa. You can't run a yeshiva part-time. So this too is a big factor in the ensuing years, as we will see. But gentlemen, we are about to enter the portals of what Rabbi Revel does at Yeshiva University. Moshe, I would not miss next Sunday's lecture and next Monday's lecture for all the dynamite that's being collected in Syria at this moment. Shipments coming in from Russia and elsewhere to keep Assad in power. I say to you, next Sunday and Monday's classes are worth more on an eternal scale. Yoni, you'll let me know whether you agree or disagree next Monday morning at 10:32 a.m. B'ezrat Hashem. My dear students, to reiterate, Morty, don't tell Richard about what's going on here, because I'm going to have to make a monthly contribution instead of getting a few pennies. Rakefet, live up to your words. Yes. Rabbi Leventhal was the main player. He was the wheeler and dealer. He created Rabbi Revel, and he created Rabbi Belkin. We will get there. It's amazing. One man, and none of you even knew the name outside of Ellie Wagner. Where's Ellie? Where? I didn't see him. I don't see him today. You don't know, a guy cuts, and he's, is he sick, is he well, is his wife beating him, what's happening? What's happening? Sick, yeah? Then Rafua Shlema, absolutely, okay. Okay, Rafua Shlema, don't tell him what I was hoshish, please. Keep it down, Josh. The tape, who listens to the tapes? Okay. Believe me, you have no idea. I'm going to show you in a minute what you talk about listening. I can't believe it. Okay. But let me reiterate. And Yitzchak loses out. He took me to task, and this time the Rebbe won. When I lose, I admit, but this time I won, Yitzchak. You'll see in a minute. Gentlemen, it was an important lecture today. Rabbi Revel was a very unique individual. Hashkacha Pratit, just the lifestyle, what he went through, the Bundes period, and that sent them to America when all is said and done. Goes into Reeds, they bring him to Philly, the Masters, and probably Rav Nesson Kamenetsky is right and Aaron Rakefet is wrong on that particular issue. It's an interesting, you can think about it. It's not earth-shaking whether he's right or I'm wrong, or whether I'm right and he's wrong, whether we're both right or both wrong, but it's a fascinating topic. And a doctorate. And then the Shidduch came already in 1909. And imagine Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he's money, and he has time to learn and time to publish. Never had that afterwards. Didn't have, at one point, time to learn, time to publish, and at a certain point already, as you will see, didn't have money at all. But what an individual. And we will continue, believe me, exactly where we left off, Be'ezrat Hashem, next Monday. Sunday, once again, it's 36 G's to the IOU list to walk into class. Now I want to tell you something very fascinating. If you recall in class, I critiqued Landau's book and the mistakes, and I in particular went ballistic that Jacob Schiff, the president of Temple Emanuel, on this Monday morning, I'm livid with rage. Koch, the idiot, they're eulogizing him, the funeral services in Temple Emanuel, and from Temple Emanuel, they go to an Episcopalian cemetery to bury him. Right or wrong? You know what's going on? This is Temple Emanuel. And Landau declares, Jacob Schiff, the president, Reb Jacob Schiff, because he gave $1,000 to a Gemilat Chesed 100 years ago. There is a website, Hirschele Zichtblatt. It's, from what I gather, a pro-Chabad website against all the commendations of Chabad. So I don't know who gave it to them. They picked up my shear against Landau, the historian. Rabbi Yoda Landau, Krit Dibir Kop, gets hit over the head by Harav Doctor, the way I spell my name, God have mercy, Rotkopkopkop Rakefet, from Falshin Historia from American Judentum, for falsifying the history of American Jewry. The comments are fabulous. Some people say, well, it's all right what he did because he mentions names that we would have never heard, like Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, etc. But everyone agrees, boy, is Rakefet right. Jacob Schiff, he turns into Rabbi Yaakov Schiff over $1,000 Temple Emanuel. Ugh, is Chabad enjoying itself? You Satma people! For $1,000 you sell your soul! And do me a favor, Morty, send Chabad a bill from Rakefet, 1,000 lira in honor of what I informed them. That's number one. Whoever wants it is welcome to it. It's fascinating. Nishma, this is on Parshat HaShavua Brian. Are you still preaching, teaching? This is a YU graduate, Toronto. You know him? Do you know him? Ben Shihech. Anyone who wants, this is the famous issue of Bamishpacha, where they interview Reb Heschel Shechta, and the beautiful picture of Reb Heschel, and the poor editor gets hit over the head that he's becoming pro-YU. If anyone's interested, this is a very fascinating article on Soho Synagogue exports its own brand of Jewish outreach. It was in the New York Times. It's sort of like Chabad. If you read it, I'd like to know your reaction. I feel it cheapens Yiddishkeit, but maybe this is what gets people turned on. Ah, this is fabulous. In the Haredi world today, they don't publish pictures of women. This is the Lubavitcher Rebbe answering a taina that Lubavitch published the picture of the Rebbetzin after her death. It's her passport picture, Rebbetzin Chayim Mashka. And the Rebbe, in his own handwriting, answers the critique. I love it. And finally, if you have any feeling for Chabad, 41 pages, photographs from the Shluchat convention that just took place or is just going on right now. And you might recognize some of these women. It's amazing. Shluchat from all over the world. You barely see a man's face, and they speak and they teach and they lead, and boy, did they solve the problem. Many of them are more intelligent, that don't put down the men, but these are fabulous women and self-expression. My dear students, I'm gearing up for the press conference right after the government is formed. If you have any questions you want me to relate to, please give your questions to Danny or to Moshe, and give them, whenever Netanyahu forms a government, I will announce the press conference. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.